are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in for our Wednesday episode, a more traditional week since we don't have to worry about that Thursday night game this time around. So it's Matchup Wednesday. Rob and I are going to be breaking down all the key matchups to watch when the Seahawks are on offense and on defense when they host or when they play the Steelers on the road on Sunday. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. We are free and available on all platforms. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. It feels like this has been a discussion on a daily basis, but the Seahawks defense is not very good. 450 plus yards allowed in four consecutive games. They became just the fourth team since the NFL-AFL merger to accomplish this feat. And again, that is not a record that you want to have your team tied to. And one of the big reasons the Seahawks defense has struggled so much, in my opinion, the most troubling position group on a very troubling defense has been the cornerback spot. They've already been playing some musical chairs there. We saw Trey Flowers get demoted a few weeks ago in favor of Sidney Jones. They moved DJ Reed back to the right side. That has not necessarily yielded the results so far the Seahawks were hoping for, at least from the Jones standpoint. I think DJ Reed has played better in his more comfortable position on the right side the last two games, but they're still trying to address that position, one that you and I would agree they didn't necessarily handle correctly in the offseason. Now they are paying for it, but they are going to get an intriguing reinforcement option back this week. Trey Brown, their fourth-round pick out of Oklahoma. He's been out since the second preseason game with a knee strain. They're going to finally get him back on the practice field this week. He was activated to practice last week, but they didn't really have a normal practice, just did walkthroughs with the short work week. But they are going to get Trey Brown back on the field this week, and he's going to have an opportunity now to start competing again for playing time right away. With the way that the Seahawks have played at cornerback, I don't know how long of a leash Sidney Jones has moving forward, especially if Trey Brown can do what he did in training camp when he played at a really high level and was moving rapidly up the depth chart.
Yeah, he was moving rapidly up the depth chart, Corbin. You're absolutely right about that. And it's easy to understand why he was, considering the fact that, as you just talked about, Seattle's cornerbacks have struggled. But, you know, you watch Trey Brown back at Oklahoma. This was a highly productive football player over four seasons in Norman. And that's, of course, with the Oklahoma Sooners in the Big 12 Conference, where they throw the football around the yard as much as anybody. You know, one of the knocks on Trey Flowers is that after making that transition from safety to cornerback, he really struggled with locating the football and creating big play opportunities for himself as far as being an interceptor. That is one of the things that Trey Brown really stood out with the Oklahoma Sooners. 31 career pass breakups, is an absolutely fantastic number. And we were able to see that with our own eyes in the NFL in the training camp practices that Trey Brown had. He was often matched up against D. Eskridge, obviously Seattle's top draft pick. And Trey Brown was one of the few guys who demonstrated that he had the straight line speed to be able to run with D. Eskridge. And that's saying something. So I do think that this is an interesting game that where Seattle might be able to get Trey Brown onto the field. I also think this might be an opportunity to see a little bit of a comeback of sorts from Sidney Jones, perhaps even from a Bless Austin or John Reed. As you mentioned, it has been kind of musical chairs at the cornerback position. You know, we talked about this earlier. I really thought this is going to be a year where it might be cornerback by committee for the Seahawks. And while I didn't necessarily think that Trey Flowers would be on a committee that is no longer in Seattle, I did think that this might be a season where Seattle would be rotating their players to try and mix and match. Considering some of the injuries that Pittsburgh has had at the wide receiver position, this might be the game that the rookie, Trey Brown, makes his NFL debut.
Yeah, I think there's a really good chance that he is going to play some snaps in this upcoming game, even though he's only going to have 1 full week of practice going into it. It's not like he can be any worse than what the Seahawks have had out there. I mean, Trey Flowers had a quarterback rating against him of almost 140 in the first 3 games. That's the big reason why he was demoted. And again, not being able to get his hands on the football. He hasn't had an interception since 2019, and he rarely has been able to get his hands on the football for pass breakups. And so Pete Carroll hinted at today, the inability to finish plays and get his hands on the football. That was really the biggest shortcoming that ultimately led to both sides deciding, you know what, it's time for a change. It's time to cut Trey Flowers. And you look at Trey Brown, you mentioned the 31 pass breakups, 4 interceptions at Oklahoma. Never had a game in Big 12 play where he gave up more than 70 receiving yards in coverage. That's a pretty remarkable stat by itself. So this is a player that, even though he doesn't fit the size spectrum that Seattle's normally looked for at 5'10", 186 pounds, soaking wet, he plays far bigger than that. Sometimes he plays too physically, and that's why he had some penalty issues in college. But the Seahawks will take some of that in the field right now because they need a player that's going to be aggressive at that position that also can get his hands on the football. He had a couple nice pass breakups against DK Metcalf during training camp. And you want to talk about a major size discrepancy there. He was able to hold up in coverage against big DK. So again, Pete Carroll talked about today, you got to take a little bit of a leap of faith sometimes with these corners. And he is probably going to be willing to do that because he was really impressed by what he saw from Trey Brown during training camp. He saw enough promising plays and very few mistakes from him, which is also a big part of this, where he had the comfort level that he felt like Trey Brown was positioning himself to compete to play on Sundays, and unfortunately got banged up, started the year on injured reserve. Now they get him back fully healthy, and he can truly be a difference maker at that position, not just because of his ball skills, but this is also a guy that will come up and he will hit you. He loves to play against the run. He is a complete football player. He'll help on special teams. So even if he's not playing right away on defense, he's going to find ways to contribute for you. And I expect, based on the way that the defense has played, especially the cornerback position, the inability to get their hands on the football. I mean, they have 3 pass breakups by their cornerbacks combined in 5 games and no interceptions to go with that. That is just not going to cut it. You know, Pete Carroll wants his corners getting their hands on the football. Trey Brown could be the answer to that problem and ultimately make himself the guy that makes this secondary click a little bit. They're looking for a spark. I think Trey Brown is the next in line, and I would not be surprised at all if he sees some action on defense against the Steelers club on Sunday.
Yeah, I think, again, that is a strong possibility. I think that you will see somebody else obviously get some playing time. Not that Trey Flowers had seen any the last couple of weeks, but again, whether it's Trey Brown, whether it's Bless Austin, who I also saw, Seahawks fans haven't been able to see this young man, but when I went back and watched the tape of where he was going up against the Seahawks while he was a member of the New York Jets, I also liked the way that Bless Austin was willing to kind of throw his body around and play very physical against DK Metcalf in particular. And as we're going to break down a little bit more in the upcoming segments here in today's show on the individual matchups that we think are going to be key to this contest, that is going to be one of the things I think is absolutely critical for Seattle, that they do play with that aggression that we have seen from Trey Brown at the college level, that I've seen at the NFL level from Bless Austin as well. And I've been intrigued by what John Reed offers as well. While your first listen every time should be the Locked On Seahawks current show, I'd suggest our listeners should have their second lesson be our Tuesday show, where you and I kind of broke down the kind of the nature of the cornerback position and handing out some grades at all the defensive positions out there. I think the most important thing is not just that Seahawks fans are looking for some cornerback to come out of the woodwork and truly be able to turn around this defense. The pass rush has to be improved. If that happens, then you will see Seattle secondary start to come alive.
Yeah, they both go together. The pass rush has not been able to do enough. And Bobby Wagner was talking about it today. The Rams were running their routes deeper than they expected that they were going into the game. And the reason it worked is because Matthew Stafford had tons of time in the pocket to allow those routes to develop. And then the defense wasn't able to make stops. And so those two things go together. Your cornerbacks are going to be better if the pass rush is more consistent and vice versa. So this defense just has a lot of things they got to figure out. I do think Trey Brown's going to have an opportunity at some point in the near future, once he's activated, to be able to put himself in the spot where Pete Carroll is willing to play the rookie. He's done it in the past with Richard Sherman, Shaquille Griffin. He will play rookies at the outside cornerback spot. Maybe Trey Brown could be next in line here in the near future and try to help address that problem they've got at the cornerback spot. When we return to the second quarter, we're going to be looking at Seahawks matchups when they are on offense against a talented Steelers defense. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hey, Seahawk fans, if you do a lot of driving like I do, then you need to know about a fantastic new app called Get Upside. When you open an account on Get Upside, you can get 25 cents per gallon back every time you fill up at the pump. Over time, that kind of saving starts to really add up. Some people are making as much as $200 to $300 per month in cash back with Get Upside, which not only makes it easy to save, but also gives the option of multiple cash out options with direct payment to your bank account, PayPal, Amazon gift cards, and more available at any time. And now when you open an account and use our special promo code Touchdown, you can get a bonus 25 cents back per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents back per gallon. So don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Download the free Get Upside app. Use our special promo code Touchdown when you sign up for your account and start saving every time your car or truck needs a fill up. That's Get Upside, available in the iTunes App Store and on Google Play. Use the promo code Touchdown. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's Matchup Wednesday. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. We're always looking forward to these Wednesday episodes because we really get a chance to dive into these matchups. And the Seahawks and the Steelers, they normally don't play very often, but it's only been 2 years since the last time these two teams met in Pittsburgh. Quite a bit of changes on both rosters, as you would expect in a two-year span, but still, there's some carryover from that game. Let's look at the Seahawks on offense going up against the Steelers defense that right now ranks 10th in the NFL in scoring defense. They've been solid, maybe not the elite defense that some thought they were going to be, but still plenty of talent at all three levels. Rob, I think we have to start our first matchup here with obviously what's going on under center for the Seahawks. We will not see Russell Wilson out there on Sunday. I had a few fans messaging me about this today. They're like, he practiced today. No, he didn't. He was in warm-up lines, and he had his right hand tucked into a pouch under his jersey. He is not going to play on Sunday. I 110% promise you that it is going to be Geno Smith. But you and I were talking about it before the show. The Steelers have one of those really dynamic safety slash corners. Really, he plays all over the place, and that's Minkah Fitzpatrick. He is the type of playmaker that really can cause an offensive coordinator headaches when they have their starting quarterback, let alone a backup like Geno Smith. To me, Smith versus Fitzpatrick might be the most compelling matchup going into this game because he can be a game wrecker in Pittsburgh's secondary.
He certainly can. You know, I think that's one of the fun things about this particular matchup, Corbin, is you were talking about two of the best free safeties in all of the NFL, in my opinion. And, of course, Quandre Diggs for the Seahawks and Minkah Fitzpatrick for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he was a high first-round draft pick out of Alabama a few years back by the Miami Dolphins. Some thought that he was a bit of a disappointment there. He gets traded to Pittsburgh, and suddenly he becomes the Pro Bowler that many of us anticipated that he would be because Pittsburgh allowed Minkah Fitzpatrick to be the instinctive ball hawk that he is. Now, one of the things that is, I think, has to be very concerning for the Seahawks is the fact that Minkah Fitzpatrick does not yet have an interception on this season. He had four a year ago, five the previous season in Pittsburgh, had touchdowns returned off of interceptions each of those seasons. So, yeah, I think that it's critical. I mean, because as you said, even if you have your starting quarterback in, Minkah Fitzpatrick can absolutely be a game wrecker, and you have a quarterback in Geno Smith who hasn't started a game for several years now, then that would seem to be a matchup that is pretty concerning from a Seattle perspective. I have a little bit more faith, it seems, in Geno Smith than some others out there. I do think that this is the type of environment in which he could really surprise some people. And I do think, as we talked about before, that this would be a matchup because Pittsburgh is as aggressive as they are with their safeties, with their outside linebackers especially, then rather than focus too much on the wide receiver matchups that against Pittsburgh's corners, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Seattle and Geno Smith look to their tight ends a little bit more. And so actually throwing the ball a little bit closer to Minkah Fitzpatrick and see if you can use his over-aggression against him.
Maybe you can get some double moves working as well, because like you said, this is a guy that is going to jump routes. I don't know how much the Seahawks are going to be mixing stuff like that in, but I am telling you, though, and Geno Smith, I'm sure, knows this, you have to know where Minkah Fitzpatrick is every single play when you get the snap, because if you don't, he is going to burn you. And like you said, he doesn't have a pick yet this year. You're really hoping that that streak can last one more game, but that is going to be a really tough matchup for Geno Smith, just because this is a guy that can be a quarterback's worst nightmare in the secondary with the way that he can jump routes and intercept footballs. Now, the second matchup that I think is really key for the Seahawks on offense, we're going to go back to the trenches. Dwayne Brown, Brandon Shell, mainly this is going to be Dwayne Brown, but TJ Watt is another player on the Steelers defense. He just got a huge payday for a reason. One of the best sack artists in the NFL, one of the best at turning up the heat on quarterbacks in general. He has given the Seahawks problems when they have played in previous years. I just have a feeling that the way that Dwayne Brown has played the past couple of games, you know, if he plays like he has the past 2 or 3 weeks, TJ Watt is going to have a field day. We just have not seen the usual Dwayne Brown out there. He's gotten exposed at times in pass protection. They need him to bring his A game, because the last thing you want to have happen is on the road with your backup quarterback in the lineup. No Russell Wilson. You do not want Pittsburgh's top pass rusher to totally dictate how the offense does things. And that is what TJ Watt is capable of doing. Again, another player that is a game wrecker that can totally disrupt what you are trying to do on offense. You don't want him to consistently be in the backfield going after Geno Smith, or it is going to be a very long afternoon for this offense. You've got to find a way to neutralize him. He's going to win some battles, but you got to keep him away from Geno Smith as much as possible to give your passing game a chance to be able to do something in a tough road environment.
Yeah, as you described Minkah Fitzpatrick a moment ago as the quarterback's worst nightmare, I thought, well, TJ Watt might be holding his hand up as if, you know, hey, he's the quarterback's worst nightmare as well. I agree with you. I think that this matchup is absolutely critical, perhaps even more critical than the initial matchup that we talked about, because TJ Watt can absolutely take over this game. And obviously the drop off from Russell Wilson to Geno Smith is significant, but the drop off from Geno Smith, you know, to whoever is likely to be Seattle's backup quarterback in this case, whether it be Danny Etling or whether it be Jake Luton, expected to be Etling, you know, that would be obviously a big time drop off there as well. I do think that Dwayne Brown is physically capable of handling TJ Watt, but Watt, it has an unbelievable combination of initial quickness, of power, and of technique. He really is a technically sound football player who very much is going to be able to take advantage of that Heinz Field kind of crowd. Melvin Ingram, the veteran on the other side, also can be a pretty fearsome edge rusher as well. I was intrigued by what Seattle got from Brandon Shell that we could go coming off of that injury. But again, this is going to be a critical matchup for the Seahawks. And last week, they had the benefit of playing, at Lumen Field. And obviously, Heinz Field is going to be a lot louder than it was for Seattle a week ago.
Yeah, that's going to be another key here. How is the offensive line impacted by playing in an environment where the crowd is going to be hooting and hollering when they are on offense? That hostile road environment, going to be a difficult situation for Geno Smith making his first start since 2017. He needs his line to protect him, particularly those tackles against TJ Watt and Melvin Ingram. But I think we also have to look at the interior offensive line. And clearly pass protection is going to be part of this, but when you have a backup quarterback like Geno Smith playing, and this is without knowing whether Chris Carson is going to be available this weekend or not, regardless, the Seahawks have got to be able to get something going on the ground in this game. And that's going to be difficult because Pittsburgh's got two players that make it difficult to run the football up front. They've got Cameron Hayward, who I think is still somehow a very underrated player in the middle. And I think he gets overshadowed by players like Minkah Fitzpatrick and TJ Watt, but he has been one of the best interior defensive linemen for a decade. And year in, year out, he's just an absolute load to block. Outstanding run defender. He's going to provide some pass rush as well. Not his biggest strength, but he is going to be a monster in the middle. And they have Devin Bush back. He injured his ACL last year, but he returned. He's been dealing with another injury. Did practice in full on Wednesday, though. So they expect to have him. His speed allows him to make a lot of plays in the backfield, and he can chase down runs off tackle and towards the sideline. He's got that pursuit speed that we saw from Bobby Wagner early in his career, what Jordan Brooks has showed at times. He's a guy that can fly around the field and rack up tackles in bunches. So the interior offensive line is going to have to be able to take care of Hayward, and they're going to have to occasionally get up to the second level and see if they can physically impose their will on Devin Bush, because that's the one area where he struggles. If he gets linemen on him at the second level, he's not the biggest of linebackers, but he's so quick and he's so fast. He's got an ability to penetrate gaps, knife through, and make plays. Those two are going to be the biggest X factors for the Seahawks to try to neutralize with the run game.
Yeah, I'm happy that you mentioned Cam Hayward. I mean, because I 100% agree with you that he is still criminally underrated. Big, powerful man who kind of plays up and down the line of scrimmage for the Steelers. They also have another former player from Alabama, Isaiah Bugs, who has developed into a pretty solid nose guard for the squad. And then Devin Bush and his straight line speed, as you mentioned, just makes him kind of an annoyance more than anything as a linebacker. But my goodness, he makes an awful lot of tackles. You would think that given the turnover that Pittsburgh has had at the linebacker and along the defensive line, that this might be a team that you could run on. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, through five games, Corbin, have allowed just one rushing touchdown to this point. So if Seattle is going to be able to protect Geno Smith with the running game, whether it be Chris Carson, whether it be Alex Collins, whoever it is, then it's going to have to be something that Seattle has not demonstrated a consistent ability to do so yet. Obviously, it's also going to be on the road. And again, it's going to be going up against a formidable Pittsburgh front. So it's going to be quite the heavy task for the Steelers, for the Seahawks, to be able to pull off that type of success in the running game against Pittsburgh.
We'll dive more into this on our Friday episode when Nick Lee and I are looking at keys to victory. But certainly there are a lot of big question marks for this offense, not just having Russell Wilson out. But this is a Steelers defense that, again, not elite maybe, but they're 10th in the NFL in scoring defense, and they've got a lot of star power at all three levels. So Shane Waldron's going to have to really dial up a strong game plan, and Geno Smith's going to have to execute. The run game's going to have to be good. When we return in the third quarter, we're going to switch gears. When the Seahawks are on defense, they have not been able to stop anyone as of late. The Steelers, up until last week, haven't been able to score many points either. They did have a solid game and a win over the Broncos. Ben Roethlisberger turned back the clock a little bit, played a little younger last weekend. Can he do it two weekends in a row? We're going to be looking at three matchups to watch when the Seahawks are on defense against the Steelers. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Do you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors? When you talk to a Built Bar fan like myself, we're definitely passionate about our favorites. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out. There's something for everyone, whether it's raspberry, mint brownie, my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie, salted caramel. There's truly a flavor for everyone to enjoy. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. And not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting on the market, but they're also healthy too. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, just 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang, continuing our annual Matchup Wednesday. We just looked at the Seahawks offense versus Steelers defense. Now it's time to talk about that much maligned Seahawks defense that has not been able to stop anyone for the most part first 5 weeks of the season. They are going up against a Steelers offense that has had their own share of struggles, but Ben Roethlisberger and company got going a little bit last week. They've got an offensive line that's had a lot of moving parts from last year to this year, made a lot of big changes up front. They've got a rookie running back that's a sensational one in Najee Harris. They've got some stud receivers, even after losing Juju Smith-Schuster. This is an offense that has some weapons. They just haven't been able to put it together up until last week. So that might be a little worrisome for the Seahawks defense, that it looks like Pittsburgh might be starting to figure things out with Ben Roethlisberger and company. Let's talk matchups here, Rob. First one that I think is a big key for the Seahawks going into this game. I mentioned Najee Harris coming out of Alabama. Sensational runner that can bowl through people. He can run around you. Dynamic talent. And last week had his first game with 100-plus rushing yards and a win over the Broncos. And by the way, the Broncos have a pretty darn good defense. Yeah. So that was a nice little breakout party for him. You got to believe slowing down Najee Harris, especially with how inconsistent the passing game has been for the Steelers up to this point, slowing him down has got to be priority number one. And a lot of that's going to fall on the play of the linebackers, Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks, who didn't have a great game against the Rams last week. Both of them need to elevate their play, or Najee Harris could go off for another 120-plus. If that happens, the Seahawks are going to have a very hard time winning this game.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, if Najee Harris runs for that amount of yards, you know, then, yeah, I think that this is a loss for the Seahawks. I think that Seattle has to make Ben Roethlisberger beat them. Harris has been every bit the runner and receiver. He's the Pittsburgh's leading receiver so far this season. So he's been every bit the true dual threat all-around player that you would expect out of a running back drafted in the first round. And so – again, I think it's absolutely critical that Seattle be able to slow up Pittsburgh's offense, especially the running game. But I do think that there is some reason for optimism here, Corbin. I do believe that it's easy for players to kind of fall into the trap of saying, okay, Russell Wilson will save us at the end of the day. And obviously, that is not going to happen this week or any week coming up here soon with him being injured. And so I do expect Seattle's defense to play better against the Steelers than they have basically at just about any point all throughout this season. And this is not just because I think that the Seahawks defense is a little bit eager to show that they can make some big plays. I also think that this is a Pittsburgh offense that has basically been, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde at many times throughout the season. You mentioned the fact that Harris went off against the Denver Broncos. That's a good Denver Broncos team. And the fact that the Pittsburgh Steelers went on the road and beat Buffalo, and also a very, very good team, in the first week of the season, but they struggled significantly against some of the so-called weaker opponents in between those two matchups. So again, you're talking about a Pittsburgh Steelers team here that does have a dynamic running back in Harris, but he only has one rushing touchdown to this point. Ben Roethlisberger has a total of 6 passing touchdowns in the first 5 games for the Steelers. It's not exactly that Pittsburgh's offense has been dynamic. It's just obviously at the end of the game, can Seattle score more points than Pittsburgh. But I think that it's critical here to highlight again Harris versus Wagner and versus Brooks, especially in coverage. I think if it's just running the ball up the middle or running off tackle, the way that Harris is very adept at doing so, then Seattle is going to struggle in that way. My biggest concern from a Seahawks defensive perspective is, can you slow down Harris as a receiver? We know all too well how much Seattle has struggled defending backs as receivers so far this season.
Well, that's been an issue throughout the Carroll era. They've had a lot of trouble stopping running backs and receivers, and tight ends haven't been quite as big of an issue, but we know historically that those have been two positions the Seahawks have had their share of troubles with defending in the passing game. Speaking of the passing game, we have to mention the Seahawks corners. I feel like this is inevitable every single week. And again, you mentioned it. Ben Roethlisberger has only thrown 6 touchdown passes in the first 5 games. It's not like he's been lighting it up. There were people in Pittsburgh before last week that were calling for Dwayne Haskins to get some opportunities because they were getting tired of an aging Ben Roethlisberger struggling out there. We know he has very little mobility at this point, but last week he turned the clock back a little bit. And even without Juju Smith-Schuster, who's done for the season after shoulder surgery, they've still got Chase Claypool, who's a dynamic playmaker, second-year player out of Notre Dame. They have Deontay Johnson, who has the ability to occasionally take the top off a defense, can create after the catch. And they also have James Washington, who kind of fell out of favor with their other receivers that they have. But now they're going to be looking for him to make some big contributions again. And this is a guy that was a very productive player at the college level at Oklahoma State. So they have plenty of receiving talent at Ben Roethlisberger's disposal if he has time to throw and he's able to unload the football and be accurate. He's had some issues with that throughout the season, but all three of those players are guys that can, after the catch, do a lot of damage. So it's going to be on DJ Reed and Sidney Jones and Marquise Blair. This is a team that gets a lot of action out of the slot in their passing game. Those guys are all going to have to play sound coverage, and when their opponents do catch the football, you better get them to the ground and limit the yak, because if they have trouble with that, that is really where the Steelers have gotten their offense going, not just the run game, but also creating after the catch. That's been big for them in recent weeks.
It has been big, and the loss of Juju Smith-Schuster is a significant one. I mean, he's kind of been Roethlisberger's security blanket. He is just so tough. He actually kind of, he's not quite as fast as Deebo Samuel, but he plays that same type of physicality. And so the loss of him, it is big for their offense. Otherwise, I think you look at the rest of Pittsburgh's wide receiver core, and to me, it reminds me very much of Seattle's. Chase Claypool being the guy who's 6'5", 230 pounds, can run in the 4.4s, very much similar to DK Metcalf, although I think that Seattle's receiver is certainly a better one. But again, Claypool is just an absolute physical freak. Deontay Johnson, to me, is very similar to Tyler Lockett in that he has all kinds of make you miss to his game, as well as the ability to get over the top, as you mentioned. James Washington is kind of that guy who's a little bit in between the two of them in terms of just his size at 6 foot, 210 pounds, but I love the body control. His ability to go up high point passes, twirl in the air, and make some pretty spectacular catches actually reminds me a little bit of a former Seahawk, Jermaine Kearse, in his ability to make the kind of the spectacular catch at times and then sometimes let one slip through his hands. It's one of the reasons why that he has been in the doghouse, so to speak, of his play caller, Matt Canada, at times. But again, I think that this is an interesting matchup from Seattle's perspective defensively, because with the loss of Trey Flowers, or the release of Trey Flowers, I guess I should say, Seattle no longer has a big physical corner. And you say what you will about Trey Flowers' inability to locate the football, he was a reliable tackler after the catch. And so the fact that you just mentioned that yak, obviously yards after the catch acronym, I think that is significant in this play or in this game. Seattle is going to have to be able to rack up the tackles once these receivers catch the football, because all of them can run away from them and create the big plays that Seattle cannot afford to give up if they want to emerge from Heinz Field with a victory.
And the Rams had success doing that, getting explosives with a lot of yak last week. The Seahawks cannot afford for that to happen against this Steelers offense. Last matchup real quick. I do think that this is a game that the edge rush for the Seahawks needs to be at the top of his game. They need Carlos Dunlap to be able to get into the backfield and create chaos. Daryl Taylor's got 4 sacks in 5 games. Keep it up. Get another one. Pad your stats. Get after Ben Roethlisberger, who is at this point basically a Statue of Liberty back there in the pocket. He is not a threat to run. He's not going to be moving around much. Very immobile. Still can pick you apart, though, if he has time in the pocket and the secondary breaks down. The pass rush off the edge has to be able to get home. And really, you could say the entire pass rush, but I think in this game, you look at the tackles, Joe Haig being one of the tackles, a veteran that is okay. He's a decent starter, but he can be exploited in pass protection. And I'm sure I'm going to butcher the name, but Chuck Okorafor, who has previously played with D. Eskridge at Western Michigan, he's the other starter at tackle. They have had some injuries along the offensive line. And again, this is a group that was completely overhauled during the offseason. Okorafor is a player that the Seahawks can take advantage of as well. I think this is a huge game for Carlos Dunlap, Daryl Taylor, Benson Mayoa, Alton Robinson, those more athletic edge rushers. They need to be able to pin their ears back. They need to go to work against these tackles, turn up the heat on Ben Roethlisberger. And if you can get to him, you can force him into some bad decisions, and he'll throw interceptions. He also will fumble the football when he's trying to move around the pocket, which is something he's not good at this point in his career. He'll have the ball hanging out there for you to punch out. There are opportunities to create turnovers, and I believe the defensive ends can be a big part of that formula.
I do as well. I think that, Ben Roethlisberger, as you said, kind of the Statue of Liberty, just try and tackle the Statue of Liberty. I mean, it's not going down too easy. And now that it's Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, there's a reason why his nickname is Big Ben. And it's not just because of the big arm. It's just because of his size. I mean, he's 6'5", 250 pounds, supposedly lost a whole bunch of weight in the offseason, but he still carries it very well if he is, in fact, under 250 pounds. I mean, he's bigger than some of the pass rushers that Seattle is likely to send after him. So there's just so many times on tape, not just against the Seahawks, but against all the other opponents out there, that he's been able to shrug off would-be tacklers and still be able to complete passes. So I think that it's critical in this game that Seattle get pressure in his face, because you're right, he will throw the ball into coverage. He does carry the ball loosely at times, can create some immediate turnover opportunities for a defense that is starving for turnovers at this point. But I also think that one of the interesting things, again, is the fact that Pittsburgh has had that transition along the offensive line. As we talked about, you know, it's only been 2 years since Seattle last played Pittsburgh, but one of the real key departures from Pittsburgh is another underrated player, Alfredo Villanueva, who was their left tackle for a long time. I played at a Pro Bowl level, but now he is no longer in Pittsburgh, whether it be Okafor, whether it be, Okorafor or Haig or Zach Banner, a local product who I'm going to be kind of rooting for if he does get himself onto the field for the Steelers. Whoever it is, these are big men who don't have the light feet that a Darrell Taylor or Carlos Dunlap, a Benson Mayoa, they don't have that the same type of athleticism. So if Roethlisberger is going to hold on to the football, then Seattle has to get home. They have to be able to create some sacks in this game or some turnovers and be able to even things out. If they do, I think Seattle can walk into Pittsburgh and emerge with the win. If they cannot get enough pressure on Roethlisberger, though, it could be another long day at the office.
Yeah, I really think that this game boils down to, can you get pressure on Ben Roethlisberger? If you can do that, then even this maligned secondary, I think that they can do a good enough job on the Steelers receivers to put themselves in position to make plays in the football. But it all boils down, can you get a rush on Ben Roethlisberger, particularly off the edge against two tackles that I think are vulnerable? If they can take advantage of it, they've got a good chance to win this game. And I'm sure we'll talk about that more as we get towards our Thursday and Friday episodes here on Locked On Seahawks. Thanks for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen every day. Now make your second listen the Peacock and Williamson NFL show. Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson give you the expert NFL analysis in less than 30 minutes. It's free and available on all platforms. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on Thursday, as always, it's Crossover Thursday. I'll be teaming up with Christopher Carter of Locked On Steelers, and we're going to continue diving into this upcoming Week 6 matchup between the Seahawks and Steelers in Pittsburgh. You won't want to miss it. Thanks, as always, for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.